Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Boomer Debate Show, giving voice to 78 million boomers from coast to coast and border to border. Each day we have a different guest and a different topic. Our guests always have a nugget or two for anyone, regardless of where you are. We hope you enjoy the relaxed conversational style of the show. Nothing fancy, just boomers sitting around the table talking about stuff. Now, here are the Boomer Debate, Pete Peters and Deborah Brown.
And indeed, welcome to the Boomer the Babe Show. It is Thursday, September 19th, 2010, and we are broadcasting from Phoenix, Arizona, from the studios of the Boomer and the Babe Enterprise Studio. And we're going to be getting to our guest in just a minute, but before we do, I want to invite everybody and our listeners to take a look at our website, www.boomerandthebabe.com. Sign up for our free online magazine. Take a little tour around the site and see everything that Boomer and the Babe Enterprises is involved in. And I'm Pete Peters.
And I'm Deborah Brown.
And today we have a very good friend of ours, and we've known this lady for probably 5, 6, 7 years. Her name is Helen McCrady, CSA. She is a casting director in Hollywood. She's been doing that, I think, for about the last 7 or so years that I've known her and that Deborah's known her. And we're going to have a lot of fun talking with Helen today about some things that she's doing and some projects she's involved in. Helen, welcome to the Boomer the Babe Show.
Thank you. I'm definitely happy to be here.
Well, we're certainly glad to have you. Deborah generally starts things off, so we'll go with that.
Well, I certainly would love to do that. And the way we usually start, Helen, is to ask people for what we call their two-minute movie. And in your line of work, that should be something that that's familiar. But basically, it's your life story, however far back you'd like to go, coming forward to today being on the show with us. So your two-minute movie, please.
Okay, so I steal Pete's line. I started off as a young child, but I was born in Vancouver, Canada. I am a Canadian citizen. I'm a legal resident alien, make that clear, right? But born in Canada, Vancouver, Canada, and then we moved around quite a bit. My dad worked in construction, and so we went where the work went. A lot of that was between British Columbia and Alberta. And so we moved around quite a bit, lived in Calgary, Edmonton, St. Albert, Saskatchewan. We did go over there for a little bit, came back to Alberta, and grounded kind of in St. Albert by the time I was in, seventh, eighth grade, I forget, honestly. But anyways, grew up there, loved Canada. It was a fun place to grow up and had a lot of good friends. Caught up a lot of them on Facebook, actually. And then came out to Arizona as a teen. At 17 years old, I just thought Arizona would be phenomenal. My dad owned race horses, actually, and we used to run horses in Arizona. So that's why I got connected with Phoenix and loved it when I'd come out and vacation there. So would go travel back and forth, and eventually, like I said, at 17, moved out there, met my first husband, and was blessed with my first son, who's now 25. That's Wes Noby. And divorced and remarried to my second husband, and had my other two wonderful children, Helen, little Helen, as we call her, Helen Berkey, who is still in Phoenix, and she goes to ASU, she's at Scottsdale Community College. She'll be in ASU in the fall. So she's in college, and then she's 22. And then my other son, Bobby Berkey, is here with me in Hollywood, and he wants to be an actor. So he's been pursuing that and doing pretty good. He's had a featured role on Glee and done some extra work. It's a great way to kind of get started in the business. But he's been on iCarly and the United States of Tara, and I think he did The Office. I can't remember. He's done quite a few shows and movies and so forth. But doing good. And I have remarried again. I guess I'm following the Hollywood standard of multiple marriages. But my third husband, Mark Montgomery, I am married to now. Great guy. We've been married 8 years this month. Our anniversary was this month.
Oh.
And So that's kind of what brought me. I don't know if I've gone 2 minutes yet, but that's kind of my full force.
No,
my whole family still lives in Vancouver. My mom and dad, and my two sisters and my brother live there.
Well,
and I've got some wonderful nieces and nephews there too.
Let's talk a little bit more about that background, because I read on one of these sheets that I have on you that your father, as you've already mentioned, was involved in the horse race business. And
yes.
You have, I guess the word is penned, a screenplay based on some of his writings and some of his notes and so on and so forth. And you're hoping to have that in production before long as far as a movie. Tell us a little bit about that and how that came to be.
Oh, absolutely. My dad kept a journal through his days of owning racehorses. And, you know, thoroughbred racehorsing is certainly not what it seems. There's a lot of things that happen around the track that is more the dirt side, right? The way they fix races and the mafia involvement and different things like that. So he kept a journal of it. And what I did is I just took his journal and wrote a screenplay. The screenplay is based on a true story, but the story itself, the actual characters in the story are fictional. They are based on people, but you know, made them fictional. And so I created a story that would allow all the things he'd written in his journal that happened at the track to showcase that in the screenplay. So I think people will be quite surprised at how many races are fixed at the level of what you see at say a track like, oh, I better not name a track and we'll get in trouble.
Yeah,
but the medium tracks, these aren't the Kentucky Derby races by any means, but we will be shooting it like at Turf Paradise and a track in New Mexico and some other places. But yeah, it's just, you know, races aren't always what they seem, and the involvement sometimes of the booking agents that take side track bets are certainly not what they seem. And so, yeah, it's all about that. So it's very interesting, very action-packed. We've got Shoreline taking a look at it right now and getting it funded. And, yeah, so it's going pretty good.
Well, let's talk briefly about how somebody, because as I think you know, we do publish e-books, and we have some e-book authors that have expressed or may express an interest possibly in having one of their books considered for a movie or a television movie or whatever that might be.
Right.
How would they, can you tell us or tell them how they might be able to go about having that looked at? What do they need to do?
Well, you know, it's not an easy task by any means. If it's a book, it definitely has to be on the bestseller list. That's, you know, if you look at the books that have transformed into a film, they were on the bestseller for quite a few months. If it's a book that's not getting a lot of attention, it's going to be difficult to get the attention of Hollywood producers. So I'd have to say, first of all, how well is their book doing? The more that they can push their book and make it into a bestseller or make it at least look like they sold millions of copies if they're self-promoting it, would be the key. You know, after that, then, you know, you have to hire the proper people to create your, you know, your budget. Just there's a package that goes with the film. And, you know, that's your budget, your script. You have to hire a screenwriter, turn it into a script. And then you take that and you start pitching it to distributors. And you try and get them to pick it up. And once you can get them to pick it up, it's a lot easier to find your financing for the film.
It's a long and arduous process, then, isn't it?
It is, yes. It's you've got to really, really want it and not give up and just keep pushing until you get the result that you want. For sure.
So,
go ahead, Deborah.
You were talking about like things at the racetrack where things are not always the way they seem. It's probably that way. It's certainly that way in Hollywood, because that's, you know, how, you know, shooting a scene, it looks one way from the aspect of watching it, you know, from either the big screen or the TV screen, and what's going on behind it and to the sides is completely different. You know, it's nothing is as it seems. So even getting your idea into the right hands is probably not what that seems either.
Well, right. Yeah, exactly. You know, it's just, it's, again, not an easy task. And it's all about networking, you know, just like in any business. I don't care if it's the film industry or if you're an insurance salesman. Whatever profession you've chosen, you've got to network. You've got to get people to know you. And when they know you and trust you, that's what they're buying into, not necessarily the product. You have to have a good product, but most people buy because of who they like. You know, if you're going to buy a car and you get a great car salesman and you just love him and you trust him, you're probably going to buy from him, even though there's a million dealerships out there to purchase from. You're going to go with the guy that you trust or the lady that you trust. So the networking is huge. You've got to get to know people, and you've got to find the places to network to start getting to know people. And once they get to know you and love you and all that good stuff, then it makes it a lot easier to get your project going.
Now, when you start talking about networking, you're always building your credibility and things like that through your networking. But you have some credibility as far as you personally are concerned with regard to things and projects you've worked on television and in movies yourself. I noticed on your sheet here that you have an involvement with 21 Jump Street as a wrangler. It was featured talent for the show Booker and a few other Cannell shows. Tell us a little bit about some of those things that you've done.
That was fun. That was a long time ago. That was back in, gosh, I want to say 89 through 90, 91. I may not be quite clear on the dates, but it's pretty close. Back then, I wanted to be an actor. And so I was a continuity extra on that show. And when I wasn't being an extra on the show, I was fortunate enough that I was able to get myself to be a casting assistant for the Denise Love Agency. So then I would be on set, and I would do exactly what you said. I'd be a wrangler. I would wrangle the extras and bring them to set and do all that. And then when Booker comes out, they actually transfer me over to that show. And so I do the same thing for them. And there was another show at that time. Oh, now I'm forgetting it. There was another show they had me on that was big at that time. And I can't remember. That's terrible. But it was all Cannell Films. Productions. Bird on the Wire came to town. That was a feature film. I got to be a strong featured extra in that with Goldie Hawn and Mel Gibson. And that was fun. I worked with Goldie Hawn that day. So, of course, as an actress back then, I was thrilled. She was amazing, just amazing to watch work. But yeah, that really piqued my interest on the casting side. I loved it. I mean, I loved acting, but I was really intrigued by behind the camera. You know, the way all that comes together and works. So the more that I did that, the more my interest grew towards the casting side. And that's how I wound up actually being a casting assistant in Arizona when I first get there. Well, actually, when I first get there, I was still acting, but that not for very long. I did a couple of commercials there and then decided that I really liked the casting aspect and became an assistant for a wonderful casting director that's still in Phoenix. And she's a casting director, producer. She's an amazing woman. Her name's Kate Gilbert. But I became her assistant, and she was definitely my mentor. She taught me everything I know. And as I worked with her, I was obviously able to build my resume and then start off on my own 7-8 years ago as a CSA casting director.
And
so
that,
definitely thanks to her.
Yeah, go ahead.
I was just saying, you know, definitely thanks to Kate Gilbert. I definitely wouldn't be where I am without her, that's for sure. She certainly taught me so much about casting and how all that crazy world works.
Now, that was all taking place, correct me if I'm wrong, when we met you. Is that right?
Yes.
When you were actually working at the Peoria Chamber of Commerce as the Peoria Film
The film commissioner, yes.
Film commissioner, yeah. And you basically brought that to fruition in Peoria, did you not?
I did, yes. We had just passed a tax incentive in Arizona, which I know is a little bit of trouble right now, but a tax incentive passed, and so when you have a good tax incentive, it does bring film to your state. So I went to the head of the chamber, Bob Ware. Was it Bob Ware at that time?
I think it was Bob Ware, yeah.
I think it was Bob Ware. And kind of pitched to him that it'd be good to have a film commission. We can try and get the film shooting in our state. I think we wound up, or in our city, I mean. I brought in three films. that did shoot in our city, and while I was there. But you know, it's tough. It's, you know, it also costs money to have a commissioned office. There's fees to be a film commissioner and things like that. And with the economy and everything the way it was going, I think we had it for 2 years, and then we had to let it, or the chamber had to let it go. Because they didn't feel it was feasible to continue the film office there, but it was good. You know, I think I believe in the film offices, the tax incentives that Arizona, that they're being voted against right now, which is really unfortunate. Because what's going to happen is we're going to lose films to Arizona. Because, you know, if the tax incentive drops, which could happen by the end of 2010, the studios absolutely will go to New Mexico, and Atlanta just passed an amazing tax incentive. They have a wonderful tax incentive, so no films are going to be, you know, they're already talking about going there. But Utah and some of the other ones that have, you know, they just have good tax incentives, and that's where, when you're going to go on location for a film, you're going to go where it's going to save you some money. So not sure why it's being voted down in Arizona, but it's definitely not looking good. I know they're still trying to get it to pass, but hopefully they'll do that. I know a new studio is going to be built there.
I've heard about a new studio being built. Who is doing that? Do you know?
You know, I'm not sure who's behind it, honestly. I know it's going to be on one of the Indian reservations.
Oh, yeah.
I think, is it the Casino Arizona? I forget. I probably shouldn't even say that. But one of the reservations are building it. But, you know, again, with all the tax incentive, it's going to be difficult. And I'm not sure, and I don't know any of the politics on it. If the tax incentive doesn't pass, I'm not sure if that will continue. I'm hoping that they do. But who knows? Or maybe having the studio go up will get the senators and the House to keep our tax incentive in Arizona. But, you know, who knows?
Yeah, exactly. Now, when you were doing the Peoria Film Commission, Deborah and I were at an opening of a film at one of the local theaters there, and I should have the name of it. I had it written down, and I don't know what I did with it, but you can tell me what that was.
The actors were Robert Loggia and Raquel Welch.
Oh, yeah, and Charles Durning. The director was B.J. Davis, and it was called Forget About It. Forget About It. So, yes, we did premiere that at our very first film festival that we had there, and Mr. Loggia was so kind to come in and be part of our opening for that. Thanks to B.J. Davis, he brought him in as our guest, who was also there. So that was fun. And then we also did The Honeymoon Is Over. Do you guys remember that? We used that to raise some funds to have more theaters at Dan Harkin's Theaters that we held there.
I do remember it, yes.
That was fun, where I just wrote a short film, and Brenton Covington produced it for me, and it raised enough money that we were able to open another theaters, but we were able to show more projects. So that was pretty cool. And it was very successful, especially for our first year. We made some money for the chamber, and, you know, it just turned out really well, and we really showcased a lot of the up-and-coming producers and directors, so that was awesome.
A lot of the local talent in Arizona.
Yeah, because that's what festivals are really about, or to me anyway, is just to showcase the up-and-comings, the ones that don't have the money to pay to get their projects on the big screen. And the festival certainly allowed them to do that.
Well, let's talk a little bit more about what it is that you as a casting director actually do. I mean, before we came live on the show, we were talking to you about the fact that you have projects that you work in across the country, and that you do a certain amount of traveling now, don't you? And then what does that entail, and what do you look for? What happens, what goes on when you travel to places like Detroit?
Oh, sure. Right now I'm working with a producer on a documentary, and it's all about actors. I can't give too much away because I have a disclosure that I have signed, but we're interviewing actors. So for that, we just wrapped in Las Vegas. We were just there this past week. And then next stop is Detroit, and then we're on to New York, Los Angeles, and Arizona, actually. I'm going to be in Arizona as well. And that's just setting up the actress. You know, my job is to get a hold of all the agents and find the actress that want to be a part of this documentary. So for something like that, it's a little bit different than a feature film. I'm contacting the agents. I let them in on the project as much as I'm able to. And then I have to schedule all the talent to be interviewed. So for something like this, they're actually not auditioning. We're looking at their headshots and resumes and just actually setting up an interview for the documentary.
Very good.
So that's where a lot of the traveling's coming in right now.
I want to just pause. We have a guest on the chat line. He's been with us before. He's Big Sarge, and he's got his smiley face waving. So hello to Big Sarge. he's on the chat line. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Helen.
Okay. So yes, I'm traveling with that, and then there's some other things I do. I put on workshops, which has me travel. I do acting audition workshops for talent. I've got right now going to Orlando, Florida in October, coming to Arizona tomorrow. I leave for Arizona tomorrow, one to run an audition session for a feature film. Then on Saturday, it's an actor's workshop. And I travel to Vegas as well for the workshops. And, you know, that's all on my website as far as where I go for the workshops. So, but they do have me travel quite a bit. But I love it. I get to see fresh faces and different talent. Not that I don't love the Los Angeles talent, but it's fun to see fresh and new talent for sure.
Well, that's really kind of what you're all about, isn't it? You're trying to give the young, starving actors, producers, directors, whatever, a leg up, if you will, and see if you can help them jumpstart their careers. Is that pretty much what you do?
Oh, absolutely. I'm 100% about that. You know, when you do a feature film, like the one that I'm casting now, the producer would like to have, which I think would be amazing, Ed Asner and Betty White back together. So I'm working on getting those two contracted. But after that, there's probably, I don't know, 16, 17 roles that could go to the local actor. And this will be shot in Arizona, but it can go to the local actor who is looking for that break. And how wonderful would it be if we were lucky enough to get those two names on our project, for a local actor to get into that. And there's certainly enough talent in Arizona to be able to pull that off. But it's just fun. I love being in a position where I can give an actor, you know, a really nice break on being in a film. We just shot Suspicion. Again, had a strong B player. It was Brad Blaiswell from, he was in the Negotiator with Kevin Spacey. He was a head FBI guy. Some people don't necessarily know his name, but he's a very good actor. So I cast him in it. But everybody else was local and gave some of the really strong local actors a nice job to add to the resume. So I love to do that. I think it's awesome.
Now, what are some of the actors that you worked with that maybe started out as unknowns and have become somewhat better known, and if not a household name, that you worked with and helped along the way?
As far as being like an A player, like an A-lister, like a Brad Pitt or something like that. Unfortunately, I can't add that to my resume to say, oh, look, there's Brad Pitt. I started his career. There's still a lot of actors out there working it. Certainly, I've worked with actors that have, you know, been able to get co-starring roles on network TV shows and have been able to help them do that. I am so not a name person, so I apologize for that. But other than my son, I've got him in. Got him a lead in a feature film and on a couple of shows. But it's just about working with them and teaching them what they need to do to make it. And basically, it's really don't give up and a lot of hard work. You're your own entity. You're your own business. And I think we were talking about that earlier, but you've got to work the business side as well as the acting side. You can't just take acting classes and think you're going to make it. You have to work the business side. You have to network yourself as a business and get to know your casting directors and your directors and producers and get them to like you personally. Because, especially for network television, the very last step, there's a lot of steps to getting on a network show, but the very last step is an actual job interview. You don't audition anymore. You sit down with the network producers and you have a job interview. And if they like you, you get the role. If they don't, the other person gets the role. So, It's getting to know all those people and going to the functions, and you know, the more they like you, the more you're going to get an audition and get through their doors.
You hear a lot of talk and terminology, things like they've got the look, or they have it, or
the it factor,
the it factor, or the Q factor, or whatever. What really do you think those are? Apparently they do exist. Is that the case?
Well, you know, I the it factor, I think, is an interesting way to say it. Yes, there's people that walk into a room and they just control the room. They walk in and you cannot help but pay attention to them. You know, their energy just sucks you in. So that's basically what I think people mean when they talk about the it factor. You don't have to have the it factor to make a living as a working actor at all. I don't think that that's a necessity, but it certainly doesn't hurt if you have that kind of energy. But there's a talent right now that I saw recently at a workshop, and his name is Pierre, and I'm spacing his last name, so hopefully his manager won't kill me, but he's got that. He walked in, and his energy, it just sucks you in. And he is one of those looks that you just can't figure out who he looks like or who he reminds you of. That's the best compliment any actor can have, is when you meet that actor and someone's saying to you, man, you remind me of someone. Because most of the time, those are the it factors. Those are people that get your attention because you can't stop looking at them. For whatever reason, you can't take your eyes off them. And sometimes they're just quirky and weird, and you can't take your eyes off them. That's kind of fun, too. So there's something about those types of people that get a lot more attention, or get their attention draws quicker to producers and directors or casting directors. Doesn't mean they still don't have to work hard and do the networking, do everything else that everybody else is doing. They just have a little bit more of an edge that maybe some of the other actors don't.
So I've been telling Deborah for years, Helen, that I have the it factor, because when I walk into a room, people think that I'm Uncle Fester, and they mistake me a lot.
I can see that. Or maybe you just It from that show. Wasn't there a character named It?
Yeah, there is a character named It on that show.
Yes, that's funny. My question is this. Can a person actually compete in the process without going through the training in an actor's class and stuff like that? Can you circumvent
no.
the process?
No, absolutely not. You know, one thing you have to remember, this is a career. Now, if you want to be, and this is, I say this respectfully, if you want to be a waitress, or if you want to be something, you know, the 7-Eleven clerk, and again, I say it respectfully, those are decent jobs, but you don't have to get training. You don't have to go to college. There's nothing you need to do. You just have to, you know, you just have to, on the job, you know, show you how to do this in a day or two, and you're done. When you pick a career, when you want to be an actor, or you want to be a doctor, or you want to be, you know, an attorney or a chef or whatever, that takes time. You have to go to college. You have to have some schooling. And that's what makes your career. Acting is just, it's no different. If you don't train, it's not easy. It's not easy to be an actor. And because with acting, if we catch you acting, you're not going to get the job. You have to learn to be very natural. And it's a lot easier than it looks. So the training is highly important. And the money that you invest in that training, you have to think of it like you're investing in college. And I would certainly encourage young talent to go to college for film and television. A lot of them, you know, like my son, bless his heart, didn't want to go to college. He wanted to just come out here and do it. Well, I, you know, learned from my oldest son by pushed him into college, and he had dropped out the first semester, and we killed a lot of funds doing that. So I was done pushing college on kids. If they want to go, just have them go. But and he did wind up going back. But you know, if you can get your college in film and television, and then, you know, take the acting challenge in Hollywood and try to get a go at it, to me that's a better route, because you've got your education to fall back on if for some reason you tire of it, or you just don't want to do it anymore, or you're just done. You're just like, you know what, this isn't for me. 10 years have gone by. I don't think this is for me. I'm not getting anywhere. You've got that education. You can teach. You can do so many things with your bachelor's in film and television. That would get you a job. You know what I mean?
Uh-huh.
But you have to have the training, and it's got to be ongoing. mean, even actors like Tom Hanks still have their acting coaches when they're not working, you know. It's like a good comparison. Like when I teach my workshops, what I tell the talent, if I was auditioning two piano players, one piano player plays every day for a year, the other piano player doesn't do anything for a year, and now I audition the two of them, who's going to give me the better audition playing the piano? Well, of course, it's going to be the player that plays every day. You know, you can use it in sports. You know, the football player that trains every day and does his, what he's supposed to do for to be an excellent football player. Then you got a football player that hasn't done a thing for a year. Now they're both going to try out for the team. Who's going to get the job? You know what I mean? Like same thing with acting. If I have two actors, someone who trains every day and does their thing and does their workshops and does their classes, trains, and then I've got the actor that hasn't done anything for a year, it's going to show in the audition room because their muscles are weak. You know, their acting chops are rusty, and it shows, and they don't get the work.
There are stories that you hear, and I'm just going on stories that you hear, about somebody that spent a lot of time and they came out of community theater or local theater or something like that. Is that a training ground of any sort for a prospective successful actor?
Well, it is, but that's more Broadway, right? They want to be stage actors. Stage acting is so different from film and television. It's big. You're playing to the back of the room. For film and television, you're playing to a camera that's 2 feet from you. So, you know, it's just night and day, two different animals. One thing I love, though, is actors that have a lot of stage resume, when they come into audition, if they go Broadway, if they go big on me, I can always bring them down. I can bring that energy down and say, you know, redirect them. I won't get into that, I guess, but I can bring that energy down. Actors that have zero stage that come in or maybe zero training, it's hard to make an actor come up. They don't quite get it. So I'd encourage every actor out there to do community theater or some sort of theater because I think it's very, very helpful on the resume and certainly helps them as an actor. But they do have to learn how to act for film and television. Very, very different animal.
Because one thing that comes to mind right now, there's a gentleman, and for the life of me, I can't remember his name, but he's been in several movies, right? I'm thinking relatively feature films. And he also now, he's originally from Michigan, and he has somewhere, I think, in northern Michigan, a playhouse. And I can't think of his name. But at any rate, but he's one that for at some level has gone back to producing or having people work in some sort of community theater in his playhouse back in Michigan. And he's also the same gentleman that does the commercials for the state of Michigan for, you know, come to Michigan, bring your business to Michigan type of thing.
And they've got amazing tax incentives in Michigan, actually. They've got wonderful things going on there.
But I was just thinking, using him as basically an example for somebody that may, because you hear these Hollywood stars that have said, well, I'm going to go do community theater for a little while for whatever reason, whatever the reasons are. And it must have
Jason
to do
Alexander.
Exactly.
Yeah, Jason Alexander. Yeah, he does theater. His is not quite community, so, you know, it's above that, but he is, and he's an amazing actor. He's way beyond he was amazing on Seinfeld, but his acting chops go far beyond that, and it shows when he gets into production. But yeah, a lot of the you know, your A-listers and B-listers come back to theater. Because there's just something about performing live. You know, I don't think there's – and because I was a stage actor as well in my younger days, and there's just nothing better than a live audience. It's so different than, you know, when you're on for feature film, you're on set, and we shoot the scene for 2 minutes, now you got to sit for an hour while we reset the set, and it's just different. You know, you might shoot the ending first, and then you shoot in the beginning last, all that crazy stuff. So it's not the same when you just get to run through the stage and get that instant response from, you know, the audience.
Well, it's amazing you say that, and because now Deborah will have some input into this, I know. Since we've been doing our radio show, both on terrestrial radio and now on Blog Talk Radio, we've been saying, well, we can. The option has always been there to pre-record it, and I go, it's just not the same. It doesn't get the juices flowing. Even a radio show, even an internet radio show, where people have to make a special effort to tune in because they can't listen to you in their automobile. But I find that to be the case. I mean, it gets my juices flowing to be talking to somebody on air live. And and it just seems to be, I don't know, Deborah, what, you have a little different feel for that, don't you?
Well, I like the live aspect too, and I also know that having that other person, not just you and me, changes it. So, you know, Pete and I don't have any trouble talking to each other for days on end. We do it all the time. We never shut up. But when we have, you know, when we have our guest on the show, and then that little bit of almost a little fear factor, like, are we going to think of something else good to say? You know, am I going to remember my lines? You know, all of that is right there in your face, and there's an exhilaration factor that starts to kind of get the juices flowing. It's very cool.
Oh, it is, absolutely. Well, even as on my end as a guest, it's like, man, I hope I say the right things or have an answer for you when you ask me a question.
Like, and your brain is trying.
Like, well.
I know. What? And I'm thinking, and I'm taking notes, and I'm thinking, all right, if Pete stops talking and Helen doesn't say anything else, I can always wheel back around, you know. So it is a craft. You know, we work our craft. We have over 300 shows that we have done with guests, and that's a lot. Yes, and it is, like you were saying, it's a business. So the craft and the business and the live aspect is all the same for us, too. And it really is a lot better when it's live. And it is, it's a danger. There's danger involved. We could all dry up at the same moment and go, I have nothing. I've got nothing.
That's when we start singing a song.
It's like, uh-oh.
Exactly.
Or tell knock-knock jokes or something.
What's that?
Or just be searching knock-knock jokes.
Right.
That's just true.
Yeah, we could always do that. So, Helen, as you're traveling and you're going from city to city day after day, I mean, do you just kind of leave home and strike out for weeks on end? How does that actually work?
It depends on the project. You know, casting, what's wonderful about it is a lot of the work is done right in my office. All the pre-production work. There's a lot that goes on. You know, selecting the actors. I mean, I might have 2,000 actors submit for one film. And I use, you know, Actors Access or now Casting. There's some good websites out there for actors to use electronically. But I go through all 2,000 actors, and I can click yes, no, or maybe to simplify it. And then I go through and I select the actors that I want and then, you know, set them up for the interview. The audition. And then when the day of the audition, that's when I travel. Wherever, if it's local here, then, you know, obviously we do it here. But if it's in Florida or Vegas or Arizona, Detroit, whatever, that's when I need to travel to that state and run the audition. Now, once the audition's ran, then, and you know, we do the callbacks and all that. Once that's complete, I don't have to be on set. You know, I can go on to the next project. You know, I can do certain things. If I take on the extra casting, which a lot of times I do, if it's 25 or more extras on set, that's the day I will definitely be on set. I like to make sure the extras are taken care of. A lot of times, especially if you're in a non-union state, the craft services may not be the best for the actors. So I like to be on set and just make sure, you know, they've got their food and water and drinks and all that they're not being forgotten. Because that can certainly happen. It's not that the production company is intentionally ignoring them. They just have a lot to handle, and sometimes they just get forgotten. And if it's not a SAG film, they'll really get forgotten. So I try to be on set if it's more than that, just to make sure they're taken care of. And I basically work like a PA, even though I'm not getting paid to be on set. It's just something I like to do just to make sure my extras are being taken care of. But I'm basically working like a PA, or which is a production assistant, and make sure that happens. So
during the course of our conversation now, there's a couple of things that you've mentioned, and one of them is the extras, obviously. And you've also made mention of the fact that you can make a good living as a working actor, as long as you know your craft. What is a working actor in the term that you use it?
To me, a working actor is someone who's willing to do what they call five and under. If it's a five and under role, you're a day player in film, or you're doing co-starring roles on network television, or maybe a guest starring role on network television, or again, supporting role in a feature film. It's your character actor. You know, there's a lot of times you'll watch shows or you'll watch films and you know the actor. You see them in the movie. It's like, man, I've seen that actor on something else, but you don't know their name, and you're not quite sure who they are, but you have definitely seen them before. Those are strong working actors. They're making a living working as an actor. They're not the lead. They're not the Julia Roberts of the world, but they're certainly making a living as an actor. And to me, that's a solid working actor. You know, and I'm sure their hopes are to go bigger, but if they just doing that, you know, the fact that they're able to land those jobs is amazing. And you can certainly make a living just doing that.
And Helen, you just said they were called five and under?
Yeah, that's five lines or less. So like say you're on Criminal Minds, for example, and you might be playing a cop and your line is walk this way, sir. That's a five and under. That's the only thing you're going to say is walk this way, sir. But heck, it pays $450 for the day probably, or maybe $800 depending on the show if it's after a SAG. Say one line and make just under $1,000 is a pretty good deal.
Do you have any opening at all for somebody that looks like Uncle Fester?
there's always room for Uncle Fester.
My gosh, $800 a day for saying "Walk this way, please." And
yeah, exactly. You know, it's crazy.
That
it's
is
crazy.
Amazing. That is amazing.
Yeah.
Helen, I'm excited now. Okay, so let's go back to my original question, I just had my 57th birthday, and I am a ham. There's no question about that. And when I walk into a room, I think I own it, but I don't. But what if I wanted to be an actress? What if I really wanted to be an actress, a working actress, even a five and under, what would I have to do? Would I have to go and take classes? You said that, yes.
Yes, yeah. Locally, one of the really good studios out there is Waymire Studios. That's Linda Waymire, phenomenal teacher for Arizona. But yeah, you would want to start off with coaching. I wouldn't take, like, say my workshop, it's an audition workshop. I bring in, I brought in Peter Pappas from Two and a Half Men and Erica Silverman from Criminal Minds. I've got Michael Tessier from Cold Case. And I bring in really, you know, Saturday Scott Weisner, who's a lead commercial casting director. He does McDonald's, Taco Bell, all those. Those types of workshops you would not be ready for. You wouldn't want to put yourself in front of a casting director when your acting chops aren't solid. So you definitely start off taking some classes with a Waymire Studios type. Once your acting coach feels that you're ready to tackle that, then the next thing you want to do is get yourself an agent, if at all possible. You don't have to have an agent, especially in Arizona, but it certainly is, it helps you to have one.
Cool.
But there's a lot of talent out there I know that aren't represented and they're having difficulties getting representation. But it shouldn't stop you as an actor. You know, you just keep doing your thing. And if you get enough jobs on your own under your belt, you're going to get agent's attention and you're going to get an agent at some point. Los Angeles is a little bit different animal. It's really important, I think, to have an agent in LA. It's hard to know because the network casting directors especially are not going to put their five and unders or their guest starring roles or even series regulars if it's going to be a pilot. Those are not going to be broadcast to everybody. Just your agents, your managers, and so forth are going to get what's called the breakdown. They're going to get the breakdown. So if you don't have an agent, you're never going to know about those jobs.
Right.
So it's really important to have an agent here. But in Arizona, usually when breakdowns go out, it goes out to everybody. Everybody kind of gets to see them.
Cool.
Kind of look that way.
When we lived in Southern California, we had a very dear friend that had a friend that we met, and they were, I don't know if this is the right term, they were cast as extras on a regular basis. So maybe they were regular extras.
That's a continuity extra.
Is that what it is? What does that mean?
Yeah. A continuity extra is the faces you see every week in the background. You know, like say on The Office, you've got certain faces that you see every week. They never speak. But you look at them, you know that that's the office secretary. You just, that's the secretary. In your mind, you don't really probably consciously think of it, but subconsciously, that's what you're thinking. They never get to speak, but they're the continuity extras. They're the extras that get to be on the show every week. And they might be, they could be the secretary, they could be the doctor on House, whatever, but you're used to seeing them because they're booked every week.
These people, I think, were working in films. I don't know how many feature films they were in, but what I was told via them was that at the time when I was in Southern California, I had a catering business. They said, you've got to go cater to these people. These production companies put on huge, lavish spreads of food and big money, and you got to do this, and you got to look into that. And I went, wow, I don't know if I want to do that. I don't know if I want to work that hard as a kid.
Yeah, you might have 900 extras on set you got to feed some days.
Yeah, exactly. There are just so many different aspects to the movie industry, aren't there?
Oh, there is. Yeah, it's crazy. From script to screen is quite the process. And there's so many people. Some features you can have hundreds of people involved. Each project's different, of course, but that's what I love about the industry. Actually, I like change. I love my job. I'm definitely one of those people that has a short attention span. So the fact that every project's brand new and it's a new animal that I get to deal with, I love that. I love that part about the industry and about the different projects.
When the credits roll, is your name there as the casting director?
Yes. Well, and it depends on the project. What I did on the project. But yeah, it'll either be my name if I'm the head casting director, or if I just did extras, if it was just locations, then it'll be my company, which is Helen Wills Productions Casting. So kind of, I mean, one way or the other, I get credit, but it just depends what my title is for the film.
On those credits when they roll, there's a lot of different categories: grip, key, grip, best boy, and all. We're not going to get into that, and you and I talked about that in prepping for this show. But can you answer the question, why do they roll so fast? You can't even read them.
You know, honestly, I don't know, and it's frustrating. A lot of times in the theater, they roll them slower, so you can read them. You know, when you go see it in the theater. I think on television, because they're going against the time of the clock, they got to start the next film or the next show or whatever. I think they speed it up, honestly, because of a time thing. I'm guessing to be.
And they're obligated by law to roll them.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
As long as they've rolled start to finish, their obligation's met.
Exactly. Exactly. But if you see it in the theater, which, you know, I highly suggest. I know it can be expensive and economically times are tough, but there's nothing like seeing it on the big screen the first time. And then on the credits, you're going to be able to see everybody. You know, that's where they don't roll them so fast. They want to make sure everybody has their time on screen, because everybody works hard, from extra, you know, grip up to, you know, the executive producers. Everybody's really working their butt off to make the production happen. So, you know, everyone should get their time on screen.
One of the last questions that I want to just ask and have a little conversation on, and I think I know the answer already, but who was it that was discovered at Schwab's drugstore, the legend has it? Was that Lana Turner?
Wasn't Lana Turner on a corner or something? I don't remember. I honestly don't remember.
But the question is, can you still be discovered at a Schwab's drugstore like a Lana Turner was?
If it happens, it'd be so rare. It'd be so rare just to have somebody walk by and go, oh, look at you. You should be an actor. Never say never. I wouldn't say that. But the reality of it, it's going to happen that way. Doesn't mean that you can't be at a networking event and you run into a director or a casting director who's, you know, casting something or working on a project, and you meet them and instantly the character comes to mind. It's like, man, this actor would be, or this person would be great for this. At that point, I might hand him a card and say, you know, we're doing auditions. Would you come in and read or whatever? That could certainly happen. But that's because the actor's doing his or her job and they're networking. They're getting themselves out there. They're you know, getting to know their casting directors and producers and so forth. But yeah, to be sitting at, I guess it'd be a Starbucks nowadays, but to, you know, be sitting at a Starbucks or wherever. And have somebody walk by and go, oh, you should be in my film. I don't see that really happening. I'd buy a lottery ticket first, you know, before
chances are slim and none, and Slim's on a horse and he's leaving Hollywood.
Exactly.
That did lead to another question. We've already talked about this a little bit, but about the look and the it factor and so on and so forth. When you start looking around nowadays, and I don't care if it's on Facebook or wherever it is, I mean, people are a lot more beautiful, a lot prettier than they used to be in my book. I mean, they didn't make them like that when I was going to high school. And and there are just so many absolutely gorgeous, gorgeous people in the world today, I think. And so many of them seem to be trying to bank that look. And I imagine it's just huge trying to bank it over there in Hollywood, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, one thing I do love, and this is nothing against beautiful people, but what I love is because of reality shows, we've kind of gotten away from that a little bit, you know, where sort of respectfully, the everyday Joe Blow, you know, Joe Schmo, as they say, the everyday look, the real look of people, you know, where you don't have to be, you know, 100 pounds wet and 6 foot tall and all that stuff. You can have just a real look about you and still have a very good chance of making it in Hollywood. You know, think of some of your television shows. Everybody's not a model anymore. It's not like how they used to cast the soap operas. Soap operas do still tend to go for the model types, but all your TV shows used to be like that, or your feature films. Now you can start thinking of some of your shows and you look at them and you know, look at Modern Family, you know, for a good example. Those, you know, again, there's great, amazing actors. They're up for 14 Emmys next week. Wonderful show. And, you know, we don't have, they're not all models on there by any means. They're, you know, nice looking, very good, strong actors. They had amazing casting director, Jeff Greenberg, doing the casting for that. But, you know, they're not always looking for that gorgeous talent anymore. Doesn't mean if you're, you know, gorgeous and beautiful, you don't have a shot, because trust me, those jobs are still out there as well. But it's a nice mix now, and I love that. I think that's what it should be. You know, so if you are 20, 30 pounds overweight, you know, don't freak out and think you got to be anorexic to get into the industry. Love who you are, be who you are. And if you want to lose weight, by all means, do lose weight, but don't do it for the industry. Do it because you want to do it for health reasons. Do it for yourself. And let everything else, you know, come into play on that. But yeah, it's definitely changed. I don't think you have to be just that gorgeous, you know, Brad Pitt. You know, I mentioned him before, but you don't have to be that anymore to work in this industry.
Well, if you think about some of the stuff that Charlize Theron has done, where she has transformed herself into characters that you don't recognize her, and she is
right,
gorgeous.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. You know, so yeah, all that comes into play.
Yeah, that's a good way to end the conversation about what to do. You know, don't worry about what you look like. Worry about your craft.
Absolutely, yeah. Get those acting chops and gear. Know what you're doing. Own the room when you walk in. Come in with confidence. Nobody wants an inconfident actor, because I certainly won't put you on set. I need someone who knows what they're doing. So when the director directs them, they have confidence about what they're going to do. The confidence goes a long, long way. Long way. So learn your craft and be confident about it.
Alan, I want to thank you for spending this time with us, number one. And number two, can you give us information on how people can contact you if they have any questions or if they want to learn more about your profession or the acting profession and so on, and anything that they want to know? I'm assuming that you can direct them somewhere if you can't handle it. So how can they contact you?
Oh, sure. You know, the best way is to go to my website, which is, you know, the old www. HelenWheels.net, and I'll spell that because it's in a different kind of name, but it's HelenWheels.net. So it's wheels just like a tire, HelenWheels.net. Of course, my nickname is Hell on Wheels. I don't want to cuss my production company name, so that's where that came from. But if you go there, there's a lot of information on there. There's a sources link, an actors link. The workshops are on there. I have another website that you can link off of onto there, which is HelenMcCready.com. That's more for my directors and producers and so forth. But, of course, I'm on Facebook. Facebook, find me under Helen Mary McCready, because my Facebook is getting pretty full. So, yeah, those would be the best ways. But the website's the best way to get in touch, because you can join the database, so you can get the emails on when I'm doing auditions or castings or workshops or whatever.
Well, that's great. And again, I know we've been chasing you for a while to try to catch up with you and get you on the show. And just as pleased that it's on Blog Talk as it was on terrestrial radio, because we had more time on Blog Talk to talk to you and get a lot more information. So, again, thanks from myself and Deborah, and good luck. And when you're in Arizona, give us a jingle, and maybe we'll stop and have one of those Starbucks coffees and see if they can
see if they can find Uncle Fester.
They can find Uncle Fester. There you go. Okay, Ellen, thanks a lot, and we'll be talking to you again soon.
Okay, thank you so much.
You've been
listening. All right,
bye-bye now. You've been listening to the Boomer and the Babe Show on Blog Talk Radio in Phoenix, Arizona, where we bring good conversation to the world. Today we brought you information and conversation with Helen McCrady, CSA, and all the good information that she brings about the acting profession. You can listen to the Boomer and the Babe Show live every Monday through Friday at 10 a.m. right here on Blog Talk Radio. Remember, we do much more than just host this show on Blog Talk. We publish ebooks, publish a free online magazine. Go to www.boomerandthebabe.com. See everything that it takes to make up the Boomer and the Babe Enterprises and all the projects we're involved in. And be sure to make the second half of your life the very best half of your life. Goodbye, everybody.
Boomer and the Babe Show, where we bring interesting conversations to the world. Be sure to follow us on Twitter, where we tweet as Boomer and Babe, and on Facebook as Pete Peters 47. As always, you can friend us on Blog Talk Radio or sign up for our newsletter at boomerandthebabe.com. Email us at host@boomerandthebabe.com with any of your comments. Remember, at 50, you're just getting started.